the following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop looking out over London.
Good night and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight with Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
All right, let me just start today's Thursday show by saying Laura Ingraham is a witch. I could have used another word, but I thought witch perfectly encompasses it. You know, we could start off with a song for her. We haven't done this in a while. May as well.
I want to tell you a story about the brand new world's biggest asshole.
Asshole.
Asshole. It's a brand new story about the brand new world's biggest asshole.
Asshole.
Asshole. His name
Her
is,
name is Laura Ingraham.
And he's the new world's biggest asshole. Oh, yeah.
So Laura Ingraham, a hate talk radio personality who's now on Fox so-called news, I think her show is on at 10 o'clock at night, she jumped into it. She decided to go after David Hogg. David Hogg, you may recall, is one of the Parkland Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School shooting survivors who has taken the lead in this movement that they've created. And she's going after him because he's having trouble getting into one of the colleges that he wants. She tweeted out, David Hogg rejected by four colleges to which he applied and whines about it. Dinged by UCLA with a 4.1 GPA, totally predictable given acceptance rates. So, and she included a link to an article from the Daily Wire talking about how he's having trouble getting into one of his chosen schools. So there's Laura Ingraham doing this. Well, David Hogg struck back and he tweeted out a list of her advertisers and said, well, let's, you know, go after her advertisers. He launched, let's see, he said, pick a number 1 through 12, contact the company next to that number. And their advertisers, including Sleep Number, AT&T, Nutrish, Allstate Insurance, Bayer, Rocket Mortgage, Liberty Mutual, Arby's, TripAdvisor, Nestle's, Hulu, and Wayfair. Well, by early this afternoon, three of them had already pledged to remove their ads from her show, The Ingraham Angle. That's, I guess, the name of her Fox News show, which I have never seen. I will admit, I have never, ever turned on her show to watch it. I have enough trouble in my life. I really don't need to subject myself to her hatred and bigotry, frankly. Anyway, the first up was Nutrish, Rachel Ray's pet food brand, sending out a statement that says, we are in the process of removing our ads from Laura Ingraham's program as the comments she has made are not consistent with how we feel people should be treated. Good for them. And then TripAdvisor was number two, who put on their website a statement, we believe strongly in the values of our company, especially the one that says we are better together. We also believe Americans can disagree while still being agreeable and that the free exchange of ideas within a community in a peaceful manner is the cornerstone of our democracy. So that's TripAdvisor. And the third company to say they're pulling their ads from her show is Wayfair, who must have gotten an influx of cash recently because, oh my goodness, their annoying commercials are everywhere. But I'll be more tolerant of them now because they did the right thing here. So three of them, within a matter of a few hours, pull out. And what happens? Laura Ingraham apologizes. Yes, she did. Let's see. She apologized saying, let me see if I can find it. Okay. She tweets out this afternoon, any student should be proud of a 4.2 GPA, including David Hogg. At David Hogg 111 is his Twitter handle. On reflection, she writes, in the spirit of Holy Week, I apologize for any upset or hurt my tweet caused him or any of the brave victims of Parkland. For the record, I believe my show was the first to feature David. That was the first of two tweets. And then she, I guess, invites him back on the show, saying, the first to feature David immediately after that horrific shooting, and even noted how poised he was given the tragedy. As always, he's welcome to return to the show anytime for a productive discussion. You know, it's one thing to apologize because you know you did the wrong thing. It's another entirely to apologize in this sort of backhanded way that that she did, because she's noting that she's losing advertisers. A real apology is, I apologize because I realize that what I said was hateful and hurtful, not because, you know, advertisers are backing out of my show. But that's Laura Ingraham. That's what you have there. Anyway, I see we've got a phone call coming in. I think it's our old pal Jason in Simi Valley. Is that you?
Yes, indeed, ma'am. You have offended me this afternoon.
I have.
You have been insensitive. You can insult witches. Wiccans are nice people. Okay? Let's get this
right.
Clear.
All right.
Wiccans are a lot of nice people.
You're right. So
now,
I take it back.
Owe them an apology. And we will not go after your advertiser. No, never mind.
Well, I don't have advertisers.
let me be clear here with Laura Ingraham. I wouldn't go back on the show if I were him, because it would be a waste of time.
Yep.
And number two, I'd still call their advertisers, because just in general, she is a vile, carbon-based life form who, to be honest with you, I don't see anything good about it, and I'm sure that the NRA will step in with lots of ads for her.
Oh, yes. I'm sure they will.
I just want to say these kids are impressing me more and more every day. Because not only they're having this and this town hall meetings that they're having across the country, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, and I'm sure you may have heard about that.
I have. In fact, my congressman, who represents the district that the school is in, because I live in that district, he was one of the first to sign on. So Ted Deutch.
Is he a Democrat?
He is a Democrat. He's good. One of the good guys. I don't know if you saw the CNN town hall they did, but he was there and he rocked it, man. He really.
Oh, yeah. I know the guy you're talking about. As
Ted
opposed
Deutch.
To Ms. Loesch, who was so scared she had to be escorted out by armed guards. Ooh.
Yes.
But I do want to give you an idea. And when Howie comes on, it might be worth mentioning it to him, if I may. An ongoing theme with the Republicans and our presidents. Cowards. Cowards. There is an underlining, ongoing theme of cowardice with all of them. They flee from these kids. They flee from these people. They don't want to deal with them. Think about it. He was down in Mar-a-Lago right now. He's hiding from Stormy Daniels.
Is he hiding, do you know what he did on Saturday when the marches were going on? And there was a march in West Palm Beach. And while the march was going on, they changed the route that they drive from Mar-a-Lago to the golf club, because there's no golf club at Mar-a-Lago. It's at another property. They changed the route, the motorcade route, so they wouldn't pass by the marchers, the protesters. That's how chicken shit this man is.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you, that's the theme, I would say, to Democrats, the cowardness of all these people, because why do they need their guns? Because we're afraid! Ah! It is just the theme that I see going through it all. I mean, right now, today, he didn't want to answer any questions, as he's bid farewell to Hope Hicks at the White House.
Aww.
And, yeah, well, you know, the truth of the matter is, the Hope Hicks thing, the sex is, as we both would tend to agree, I don't care about that. He's a scumbag. you know. But what I find more interesting is that she stands a chance of getting him into a deposition.
Hope Hicks, you think, does?
No, not Hope Hicks. No, no.
Stormy Daniels.
Clifford.
Yep.
She, you know, whatever this is, they stand a chance of getting him under oath. And that, to me, is, you know, I think the way they've handled this entire thing with her is, I think gross incompetence would be an understatement. You know, I mean, this is, it's kind of interesting that, wouldn't it the ultimate irony be that it would be one of these women who helped bring this man down?
Yes, it would.
It's very possible.
Hey, Jason,
Look, you have a great...
You too. Thank you for calling. It's always great to hear from you. Let me run along because we've got another call coming in. Hi, who's this?
Hi, Nicole. This is Karen calling from California.
Hi, Karen.
Hi. Hello. Pleasure to talk to you, and I hope you're doing very well. You know what's interesting about Ingraham, real quick?
What's that?
This is a woman who is a breast cancer survivor.
I didn't know that.
And yet she is, but she is a horrible, nasty piece of work. I mean, you're thinking somebody who's been through that, they might develop a compassion gene.
You would think.
And she, like, one would think. I mean, we've heard about what you've gone through. Mm-hmm. God bless you a million times over. And others who fought this horrible disease. And most of the time, many of them come out with a much better perspective, and they're better people, not perfect people, but nevertheless, she is a soulless, empty enabler. I'm sorry to say that about her, but she is.
Yeah,
as so many who worship this cockroach, this rancid tub of lard who's in the Oval Office right now. I'm sorry. And you know, the other point I want to make before I hang up, it kind of goes into the midterms, but Democrats have to quit trying to reach out to this group of people. I'm sorry, they're lost. They're the 30% who have always supported authoritarians, and they will never change.
Yep, I agree.
The goal is to go. Thank you. Yes, thank you. If you agree with me, then I know I must be getting something right. It's time for the Democrats not only to keep rank and file Democrats and those independents, you know, to keep them coming back to the polls. It's time for them to pursue the people who didn't vote. Now, whether you agreed with all their reasons or not, but they're reachable. Trump voters, I'm sorry, they're not.
They're a lost cause. I agree. Now, let me ask you, question, Karen. Did you watch the reboot of Roseanne the other night?
I did not. I have never been a fan of hers.
Ah.
I don't care about her.
Uh-huh.
There's a part of me that thinks, even if she is a Trump supporter, that this was nothing more than a stunt to make sure that his rabid, mindless base tuned in. You know, the conservatives are clever with marketing. Remember Clint Eastwood's film American Sniper, which, for the record, I liked and I think was a much more nuanced and interesting portrayal of Chris Kyle, whether you agreed with his viewpoints or not. I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
But if you watch that film, it's not really a rah-rah Iraq war. And I'm not a fan of Clint Eastwood. But nevertheless, they marketed that very cleverly to the right wing, and that's why it was such a big hit and became this cultural touchstone, just like they did with The Passion of the Christ, blah, blah, blah. This is nothing more than a marketing stunt. I will never watch her show. I don't like her. I didn't care for the show, so.
Okay, well then
no.
you're not the right person to ask, but I do have a few thoughts on it. So
yeah.
Anyway,
yeah. Thank you. Keep up the. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's
say
okay.
Something else?
Nope.
Thank you. Keep up the great work. Bye.
Thanks so much, Karen. Good talking with you. So let me just, I'll weigh in on this because I know Howie Klein won't be here today. He's out today. Dave Johnson will be filling in his place, and I know Dave didn't watch Roseanne either. I did. And I used to, I'm not necessarily a huge Roseanne Barr fan, but I always thought the show was really well done. I thought it dealt with issues in a funny way, much like All in the Family did. And so we watched it, and I thought it was good. You know, the thing that leaves a nasty taste in my mouth is the fact that not only was her character a Trump voter, which was okay, but the fact that she herself is a Trump supporter, which I find distasteful. The character in supporting Trump just looked like an ignorant woman who, like many other ignorant women, voted for Trump. I don't think it helped perpetuate him as a president or a candidate. I thought And the other characters, most notably Jackie, her sister, I made the mistake of looking up the chat room. I shouldn't do that. No complimentary sweet and low today. You're going to have to wait on that one. So Jackie was an ardent Trump detractor, so much so that but she let Roseanne get the best of her, and she wound up voting for Jill Stein instead of Hillary Clinton. But she shows up wearing a Nasty Woman T-shirt and a pussy hat and the whole thing. I don't think it was too heavy handed on the side of Trump. I thought it was really well done. Now, then David and my husband and I were talking about whether or not it's a show that we want to watch. There are not many sitcoms that I find entertaining. In fact, I don't think I watch any sitcoms. This happens to be a well-done show and it deals with other issues, too. It deals with gender fluidity. One of Sarah Gilbert's children is a boy who likes to dress like a girl. And he's in elementary school, and Roseanne Barr's character, of all things, was supportive of him. So, I think to draw the line and say, well, I'm not going to watch that show because what? Because Roseanne Barr supports Donald Trump? I think that takes us down a slippery slope. So I'll watch the show again, and if it turns out to be not funny, then I'll stop watching the show. But I think it's really dangerous when we say, well, she's a right winger. David used the example, would you go see Ted Nugent in concert? Well, no, because his music sucks. To be honest, I love Chris Isaak. Now, Chris Isaak is not a Donald Trump supporter, but he is a Republican. I don't let that stop me from liking his music. So anyway, just my two cents on that. As I said, Dave Johnson is along today. There's a lot to talk about. So we'll take a quick break. We'll take care of what's news and come back with Dave Johnson of a long line of Johnsons who are correct next.
I read the news today. Oh, boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
The president ousted Veterans Affairs Secretary David Shulkin Wednesday, as usual, doing it via Twitter.
Well, after weeks of uncertainty, David Shulkin is out as Secretary of Veterans Affairs, the last Obama-era carryover in the Trump cabinet. He was in good favor with the president until he wasn't. He took heavy incoming fire after an internal report showed, quote, serious derelictions surrounding a trip Shulkin took to Europe with his wife. The tab for 10 days was $100,000. While in the UK, they accepted tickets to Wimbledon. The report also found his chief of staff doctored an email so taxpayers would cover the trip's expense. Trump announced the staff change where else on Twitter, writing, quote, I am pleased to announce that I intend to nominate highly respected Admiral Ronnie L. Jackson, M.D., as the new Secretary of Veterans Affairs. In the interim, Honorable Robert Wilkie of DOD will serve as acting secretary. I am thankful for Dr. David Shulkin's service to our country and to our great veterans. And while Shulkin's rumored possible replacements ran the gamut from a Fox News host to a three-star Army general, the president's choice was a genuine surprise. He chose his doctor, the physician to the president, to run the second largest agency in all of our government, 10 times bigger than the FBI. You may remember the doctor from his memorable on-camera briefing after examining his patient, the president. U.S. Navy Rear Admiral Ronnie Jackson was selected as White House physician back in 06. He previously treated President Obama. And just last week, he was promoted and received his second star. Here is a bit from that memorable briefing a few months back.
He has absolutely no, you know, cognitive or mental issues whatsoever, that he is very sharp. He has incredibly good genes, and it's just the way God made him. His heart is very healthy. He's very sharp, and, he's very articulate when he speaks to me. More stamina and more energy than just about anybody there. The president's overall health is excellent. His cardiac health is excellent. He has incredible genes. I just assume remain fit for duty for the remainder of this term and even for the remainder of another term if he's elected.
The New York Times is reporting that former White House lawyer lawyer John Dowd was in contact with Michael Flynn and Paul Manafort's lawyers and talking about what they'd say if they pleaded guilty and cooperated with Robert Mueller's Russia investigation. Three sources say that Mueller's team is now looking at the possibility that Dowd made pardon offers to both former Trump advisors last year because the president's team was concerned about what they might say if they struck a deal with the special counsel.
The former head of President Trump's legal team, John Dowd, raised the prospect of presidential pardons for former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn and former Trump campaign chair Paul Manafort, just as special counsel Robert Mueller was building a case against them. Three sources tell the New York Times that Dowd's conversation with Michael Flynn's lawyer occurred sometime after Dowd took over last summer as the president's personal lawyer, at a time when a grand jury was hearing evidence against Flynn on a range of potential crimes. The Times also reports that the pardon discussion with Paul Manafort's attorney came before his client was indicted in October. The Washington Post reports that one person familiar with the outreach said Dowd, over the summer, relayed to Manafort's lawyers that a pardon was a possibility. The FBI raided Manafort's home in the early morning hours of July 26th. Yesterday, Dowd told the New York Times, quote, there were no discussions, period. As far as I know, no discussion. White House special counsel Ty Cobb said in a statement, quote, I have only been asked about pardons by the press and have routinely responded on the record that no pardons are under discussion or under consideration at the White House. But others with roles in the Trump White House say there have been pardon conversations and are reportedly talking to the special counsel about it. Two people with knowledge tell the New York Times that during interviews with Mueller's investigators in recent months, current and former administration officials have recounted conversations they had with the president about potential pardons for former aides under investigation. According to a person briefed on the conversation in one meeting with lawyers from the White House counsel's office last year, Trump asked about the extent of his pardon power. The lawyers explained that the president's powers were broad, and in other meetings with senior advisors, two sources present say the president raised the prospect of pardoning Michael Flynn.
A district court judge has ruled that the emoluments case against Donald Trump can move forward. According to Bloomberg, Judge Peter Messate in Greenbelt, Maryland, rejected the Justice Department's argument to dismiss the lawsuit. The ruling was a huge blow for Trump, who swears there are no conflicts of interest and no violations of the Constitution's emoluments clauses. Detractors say, however, that world leaders and influential political organizations and leaders are actively using the Trump Hotel near the White House in a way that helps the Trump family profit. The ruling marks the first time that a lawsuit of this kind has cleared the initial legal hurdle, a finding that the plaintiffs have legal standing to sue the president in the first place. This case is one of three brought by the watchdog group Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, or CREW. And that's a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is fully listener-funded, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com/donate.
You're listening to the Nicole Sandler Show on Progressive Voices and NicoleSandler.com.
Olson Johnson is right. I say we stay and fight it out.
Dr. Samuel Johnson's right about Olson Johnson's being right. And I'm not giving up my ice cream parlor that I built with these two hands for nothing or nobody.
Howard Johnson is right.
The latest in a long line of Johnsons who were right. Correct. It's Dave Johnson on the Nicole Sandler Show.
Well, Dave Johnson is a friend of the show, a former senior fellow at the Campaign for America's Future who writes at seeingtheforest.com and comes on and hangs out with me when I ask him to. Hello, Dave Johnson.
Hi, Nicole. Here I am.
Well, thank you for joining us today. So I don't know if you heard the beginning of the show. I was talking about Laura Ingraham. What a bitch this woman is. She's just too much. Have you heard the controversy, what this is all about?
Oh, yeah. It's horrible what she's done. But going after kids because they were victims of a mass shooting.
Yeah.
Humiliating. Yeah.
going after a 17-year-old who, you know, who is just following his heart, really, doing what he can do to try to make the world a better place, and she goes after him. Just the worst of the worst.
He's in a closet, hearing people screaming and hearing the gunshots.
Yeah.
And she has to humiliate him because that happened to him.
Yeah.
Because it demonstrates what these damn weapons can do.
Right.
Which is what they're for. That's just all they're for. These semi-automatic, high-capacity, high-velocity weapons are for one thing. They're not for self-defense. Not in any way are they for self-defense. And the people who try to defend them say they're for shooting at the government. In my opinion, someone who says they have their gun so they can shoot at the government is the last person that ought to have a gun.
I agree. Yeah. I agree. And that's not what the Second Amendment says. You know, one of the more compelling things about these kids is, you know, for me, I always quote the Cheryl Wheeler song, "If it were up to me, I'd take away the guns." I read John Paul Stevens' op-ed in the New York Times the other day where he calls for repealing the Second Amendment. That's not what these kids are calling for. They're a lot more measured than that. They're calling for common sense gun laws. They're calling for an assault weapons ban. They're calling for universal background checks. They're calling for waiting periods. They're calling for raising the age. They're calling for sensible gun regulations. And the way some of these so-called adults are reacting to them is just, I would say, childish, but that's an insult to children.
No, I would say a different word. I'd say intimidation.
Mm.
That's what we've all been experiencing, and that is why our politicians are so, excuse me, to this gun shy about the NRA. It's intimidation. It's not, you know, the insults. There's a threat. There's an implicit threat there, and sometimes they get very blatant about that threat. If you see any of the NRA's videos, it's real clear. This is intimidation, and it's violent intimidation at this point.
Oh, I agree. Give these
kids... The Second
kids...
Amendment...
Yes?
Go ahead.
No,
the Second Amendment, basically it says you can have a musket.
Yes.
If you are, you know, a single hand-loaded musket, if you are in a well-regulated militia. That's what it says.
To me, that's the National Guard. I mean, it was before we had a standing army. It was the National Guard they were talking about.
It was before we had assembly line manufacturing weapons.
That's right.
Those were handmade.
Yep. Yeah. And it took like 2 minutes to load it. So, right. It was a totally different animal. But there's no reasoning with the NRA, or with these people who are backing them up, but these kids are just, they're so inspiring. You know, you and I have had a number of discussions, both on and off the air, about being depressed since this election and in the world that we're living in. I know I wake up every morning with a knot in my stomach. I've lost about 30 pounds, which, you know, at another time I'd be thrilled about it. It's just the way I'm losing weight is not a good thing.
Right.
You know, but... The seeing the way these kids have just reacted to the most horrific thing that you can imagine happening in a lifetime, it gives me some hope.
It's because of their age, they have not had the years of coming against these walls, the intimidation wall, the money wall, and the outright theft of democracy wall that we have come to. That has become ingrained in our thinking, I think, where, you know, they talk about 90s Democrats who were afraid to do anything that might offend Rush Limbaugh because he might say something bad about them. And then, of course, he says bad things about them, even when they cozy up and try to move, as they call it, move to the right and things like that. There's this whole ingrained response to what really is just intimidation that so many of us just came to accept as the way it's got to be for so long. And these kids, they say, look, people are shooting at us. You're not doing anything. They don't see this ingrained response. They don't see any of it. They see politicians are not stepping up and protecting kids. And the extent to which kids in school now have to, you know, every school you have to have a training, a drill, you know, where you drill on what to do if someone comes in with one of these weapons. And the obvious question is, why are these weapons out there? Mm-hmm. Isn't even being addressed. And these kids are like, what are you doing? And it's just wonderful to see. And it's not just that. There's so many of these sorts of things where they're just not accepting the compromises that we somehow came to accept. You know, I always use the frog in water that it gets warmer and warmer and warmer, and the frog doesn't realize it until it's too late.
Right.
Is the propaganda bath that we all soak in every day that we become so used to that we don't see obvious things, which these kids, because they're kids, they just see them. And it's just wonderful to see them just break through that and come to the simplest thing is people have these weapons that are designed to do nothing but kill large numbers of people in a hurry. How can that be? And they're the ones, because of the school thing, but it's not just schools. There was that concert in Las Vegas. Nobody did anything after
That's right.
The tens of thousands. Here's a comparison. There might have been, I think the total is 34, 38 cases of what might be voter fraud, all right, in 10 years. Maybe 38 voter fraud, right?
Right.
And as a result, Republicans are, you know, the hysterical reaction, of course, it's just an excuse, but they're denying the vote to literally millions and millions of people because of a few cases of what they call voter fraud.
But that's not That's not really why they're doing it. They're doing it because they want to deny the vote to millions of people, but they're using the 38 or 39 as an excuse.
Yeah. But then the next one is 9/11, all right? Mm-hmm. We were attacked by terrorists actually from Saudi Arabia, and then we spent literally all the money in the world since then on these ridiculous security things. I mean, police cars in small towns in Kansas got all kinds of assault rifles and special communications equipment. And, you know, the national response, we all have to take off our clothes to get on an airplane, et cetera, et cetera. Never mind that there's more terrorism in the U.S. than anything related to Muslims. But this, they lay down an entire security structure and persecution structure of people who are non-white because of that. But the thousands and thousands and thousands of people being killed by guns every year, 38,000 a year. They say suicides aren't deaths from guns, apparently, you know, but it is 38,000 really. And they do nothing. Worse than nothing. Sorry, I'll start yelling if we keep this.
That's fine.
But they just see it. They just see it and say, look, wait a minute. The contradiction is right there in front of all of us and all of us. We're kind of like, there's nothing you can do about it.
Right, except these kids who don't know that rule exists. They don't know that you can't do something about it. So they're doing something about it. And you know what? These kids were just the right age because, you know, the kids at Sandy Hook were too young. And so these kids, and boy, talk about taking just the worst experience imaginable and turning it into something positive. Again, giving us some hope for the future. Now, I've got an 18-year-old daughter who will vote in the next election. And she's now paying attention to things. I mean, it used to be she'd bitch because we always have the news on the TV. Now she actually sits down and watches it with me. She's interested in things.
How far are you from Parkland?
5 minutes. It's the next town over.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So this is my community.
The News Hour. Yeah. I saw a thing on the News Hour this week. It was a story of two women that were friends in school and college. They went on, they had similar careers. They both then became librarians. One became a librarian at Sandy Hook Elementary School, and the other became a librarian at the school in Parkland.
Oh, wow. Wow.
And they were talking about why they went to the march. It was really something to see, but it was so sad. I get so sad when I see these these stories of what's happened to these kids. They're kids. And still, our corrupt Republicans in Congress, I don't like to say Congress won't do anything because that's not correct. It's the Republicans in Congress. Yeah, because Obama always said, Congress won't do this. He wouldn't point the finger at who to blame, so nobody knew who to blame.
You know,
no, it's the Republicans. But
Obama, you bring up Obama, Dave Johnson. And this is not the time really to bitch about him, but I need to for a moment, because as much as I would give anything in the world right now to have Obama sitting in the Oval Office instead of the orange thing that has been occupying that seat for the last year and a couple of months, Obama really, he lost so many opportunities to do the right thing. And I think he left the door open for us to have Trump as president.
Oh, yeah. How many ways? First of all the way back to the banking crisis, and he, remember the bonuses? Remember the bailout money that was used to give huge bonuses?
Yes.
And Obama didn't do anything about it. He appointed a guy to look at it, you know, all of this. But basically, they all got their huge bonuses from the bailout money.
Yep.
Because we can't hire other good bankers if we don't give these bonuses.
Right.
Come on.
Which was all nonsense.
They would not prosecute them. They didn't prosecute a single case of banking fraud. They wouldn't prosecute other white collar crimes. It was just like they wouldn't prosecute the Bush people for torture.
That's right, which gives us Gina Haspel. I mean, the next CIA director is somebody who not only was complicit in torture, but helped cover it up.
Yeah, but think about this, okay? You know about the Ivanka Jared fraud case that came before the New York district attorney, and then he got a great big contribution from their lawyer, and then he didn't let the case continue to trial. He just dropped it, okay?
Yes.
If they had enforced the law, you know, just normal law against corruption, against, let's say, money laundering, fraud, all of the things we're finding out about Trump now, if we did not have this culture of non-enforcement of the law, of the double standard of you hop a subway there, and they arrest you and you can even go to jail, but versus a parking ticket, which means you own a car, you know, you pay a little fine.
Right.
This whole double standard of the law, if they had enforced normal laws on all of these Trump types, that alone means we wouldn't have a Trump. But it means a lot more than we wouldn't have a Trump. If they enforced other corruption laws, we wouldn't have a Republican Congress. Well, you know, the whole corruption machine that we deal with now became normalized. So I said Obama, you said Obama, and speaking fees.
Say again?
Corruption, okay. Speaking fees, okay.
Yes, speaking fees.
It's become normalized that people in government, after they leave government, cash in with the very people they were supposed to be either regulating or prosecuting or otherwise having oversight over. So the rule in government is don't make waves. Especially if you're like in the Securities and Exchange Commission or places like that, the Department of Justice, you don't go after the large corporations, you don't make waves, and then after a while, and staffers too, by the way, and then after a while, you get out, and if you're like in the Congress, you can go be a big deal lobbyist for millions, and if you're an attorney in the Justice Department or the Securities and Exchange Commission, you can go collect, or if you're at the top, you can go make millions, tens of millions, $100 million in what's called speaking fees. The point of seeing somebody leave office and then collect all this money in speaking fees is just as much that you've used your position as a civil servant to cash in later, but even more, if you're in government now and you see somebody do that, you're going to think twice about messing up your chances to do that. So there's Obama collecting his speaking fees. There was Hillary, her speaking fees. Bill Clinton, $100 million or something, is what's called speaking fees.
Well,
so this culture Okay, we've sidetracked here, haven't we?
Yeah, but that's okay. But that's the reason why the drain the swamp line worked so well. By the way, one of the phrases that I guess Cambridge Analytica was testing long before Trump jumped in the race.
Exactly.
Yeah, long before. That's why it worked. I mean, when I heard that, I thought drain the swamp. Yeah. Unfortunately, Trump is in deeper than Obama ever was. But the fact is, Obama, when the Democrats had power, didn't do the right thing with it.
And before that, I go back to I go way back. I go back to they didn't get Nixon for what he did with sabotaging the Vietnam peace talks so that he could beat Humphrey. Then they pardoned him. Go back a ways, but go back through just the Obama years. If Obama and his Justice Department had cracked down on things like money laundering and such, which is common and obvious, and if we had closed up these limited liability LLCs registered in Panama and such, where you don't know who runs the company, all those kind of things like that, we wouldn't have Trump because Trump would be in jail for the stuff he did.
Exactly.
So that if we wouldn't have these corrupt clowns running for office, they'd be in jail.
Things would be wholly different. We can't look backwards to use a phrase that he did. We need to look forward and see how do we get out of this mess. And frankly, I don't see a way out. Now, Dave Johnson, I want to ask you, because one of the things that we used to talk about a lot had to do with trade. And during the campaign, obviously Bernie Sanders was very against the TPP. And NAFTA, and so is Trump. In fact, he put tariffs in place. You wrote something at seeingtheforest.com that you actually favor the tariffs, although not the way Trump did it. What do you mean? Are the tariffs a good thing?
Well, if I can go on for a minute.
Of course.
First of all, the tariffs themselves, these tariffs themselves are from actual processes, legitimate processes that the steel one began under Obama, and it was called Section 232 of the Trade Expansion Act. They did an investigation. They looked at what China was doing. And then they came to this conclusion that, yes, China is dumping. China and others. Now, dumping means that you sell something on international markets for less than the cost of producing it. So, government subsidies, various other things. Now, what's going on with that, first of all, go to the steel for just a second, is that China ramped up their steel production dramatically when they were building the massive high-speed rail network, which they did, which is good, and all the other infrastructure projects they did that really made a huge difference in China. That's how they got through the big recession, is they just printed money, basically, and built stuff and employed people, and good for them. They're taking care of their country, their people. They ramped up the steel production, but then when that wound down, they still had this massive steel production over capacity and didn't lay people off, didn't close the plants and stuff like that. Instead, they start selling the stuff internationally at very low prices. So first of all, they didn't want to unemploy people. Second of all, it's a good strategy to go after the capacities of other countries and knock them out of the market. The San Francisco Bay Bridge, we got Chinese steel. They used the money to modernize a specialized kind of steel plant there that's now bidding against U.S. companies all around the world for bridges.
Right.
So they were taking care of their people, their country, their industries, and they were strategically attacking the rest of the world. Now, normally what you do in those cases, and by the way, because of that dumping, other companies around the world have had to shut down and such. So this is a response. Now, it's similarly the more recent, which didn't get all the news, but because of China's cheating. Now, this is called a Section 301 case, and it's about national security, but it's about China's, the word is cheating, but We could go into that later, but they inserted the intellectual property theft, and we put $60 billion of tariffs on that. Now, that's a legitimate thing Trump did. It's not this. It's not as crazy as people say. You know, it's the usual pro-corporate centrist types that are all screaming about. But here's the thing. He did it without any notice. He didn't even let people in his staff know. He appears to have decided to do it on a moment's notice. There's right. No preparation. There's no facing in. And it's not part of any larger national economic industrial policy at all. So it really is just basically destructive because it's kind of nuts the way he did it. It was sort of the right thing to do, but only in the context of having a larger plan. So that's what that was. Just to filibuster for a second and explain what that was.
Okay.
But the larger picture, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, NAFTA, Obama in the primaries in 2008 won the Midwest by going around promising to renegotiate NAFTA if he got into office. And then the minute he got into office, and there was some controversy before that because his emissaries were going to Canada and Mexico and saying, don't listen to that, he doesn't mean it. And then immediately after getting into office, he didn't do it.
Right.
That's a whole different trade story. Go ahead.
No, I just said, no, that's right. That's exactly what happened. Okay, he didn't do anything.
Then I'll ramble on. That's a whole different trade story. The word trade, it's a loaded phrase, okay? Trade historically means that Central South America, they can grow bananas or rubber trees. And mm-hmm. our Midwest, they're really good at growing grain, corn and wheat and stuff. And so you trade that grain, the corn and the wheat, for the bananas and the rubber. That's trade. And they call it comparative advantage. Because they have the advantage, they can grow one thing and other areas can grow another. That's trade. Of course that's good. Everybody gets, you know, to get things they wouldn't have otherwise had. And by crossing borders and stuff, making agreements, it gets less complicated. You can get it in a hurry. You don't have to spend too much. You just trade some grain, et cetera, et cetera. All right. But what is it when you take China with extremely low wages and almost no environmental enforcement, even if they do have laws, and you close a factory here, you move all the equipment there, you start making the same things there, bring the same things back here to sell in the same stores, and the comparative advantage was that China's not a democracy, so they can exploit the environment and the workers very easily. Is that what you call trade? Well, yeah, now these goods cross a border, so they call it trade. And, of course, there's a lot of people say trade is always good because we get bananas. And they also like to say, well, that brings the prices down. Yeah, you use slaves, you know, you dump stuff into the air and the prices come down, and then the air kills you, and then then nobody has a job. But so different things about trade. And NAFTA and the World Trade Organization, the way it happened with China entering it, and the Trans-Pacific Partnership and all that were about advancing that agenda of getting these giant corporations and their billionaire investors past the borders of our democracy. So that, and as we've seen since they started playing this game, late 70s into the 80s and everything, that we get this huge trade deficit built up, which is representative of the amount we're doing that. And you see the inequality, just, you know, everything goes to the top. They broke the unions. People don't have, because you're now competing with some Chinese person making 20 cents an hour, you don't have the ability to go on strike and such to demand a decent wage here ever since then. So that's the game that Trump understood they were playing. Trump had no intention, and even said so. I have some interviews with him where he even said so before the election. He had no intention of doing anything about it, but he identified what people were feeling, and NAFTA, and he used NAFTA as it's a kind of a code word for all of this that was happening. So
right.
That's how Trump won those states.
Do you get the feeling that he has any conception, any knowledge of what he's talking about? I mean, when he tipped his hat and said that he told Justin Trudeau we had this trade deficit with Canada, even though he didn't know, and apparently we don't, but he insisted we did. That scares the shit out of me, kind of stuff like that, because he's mouthing off about things that he doesn't have a clue about.
No, he was kind of right. We have a trade deficit on goods, and that's the things that regular people can make and make a living, versus services, which includes, you know, banking fees. Okay, so Wall Street does a $1 billion deal and gets a $100 million fee for it. That's a service, and we have a surplus in services, and we have a deficit in goods, which is things that are made. So it's all about this financial Wall Street profits versus Main Street profits. So he actually was right on that point. But Canada, come on, that we have this problem with Canada. We don't. Mexico, it's because the borders of democracy again. People are paid low and can. If you try to unionize in Mexico, well, I'll just say don't try it. Okay, and that's how they keep the wages low. So but Trump. Trump says this stuff. He sort of grasps that one side of it. He's always in his career talked about this, but he's doing kind of the opposite of all the right things to do about it. So, yeah, he is a clown. The stopped clock, the stopped demented brain is right twice a day when it lands on certain things, but his solutions are ridiculous.
Right. He's stumbling onto a couple of things, but his lack of knowledge about what he's doing makes it really dangerous.
Or lack of real concern, too.
Well, there's that. So, Dave Johnson, the other thing that really concerns me about him is his penchant for strongmen, for despots, for dictators. The way he'll never say a bad word about Putin. In the same token, he almost applauded President Xi of China, or I guess I should call him, you know, president for life, and joked about, oh, maybe we can try that here. Except I don't think he's joking. I really think he's that demented.
I think he's just voicing the behind-the-scenes Republican billionaire crowd's feelings about democracy. That if you read back into the, I don't know how far back, libertarian Ayn Rand and all of that, these people hate the idea of regular people having a vote and a say and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
They always talk about how people will vote for more stuff for them, but they'll tax the rich to get it and all that. Well, the other side of that's democracy. That's how a representative government is supposed to work, and the people who benefit the most are supposed to chip in because they have benefited the most from that system. Democracies are always more prosperous, and so the rich people, you know, they gain from the democracy wants good bridges, good schools and all of that, and then the rich people get the benefit of that because that's how they get the protection of the military, they get the protection of the courts and all of that. So it functions well for some people to prosper economically and other people to supposedly get good jobs. Well, Republicans, especially Ayn Rand types, talk about the takers and the makers. And the takers are we the people in this equation who want to tax the people who benefit the most. Trump just gives voice to that. But this has been the undercurrent of Paul Ryan and the Republican Party for a long time. So it's no surprise if you look at Scott Walker refusing to hold elections for open seats because Democrats might win. If you look at voter ID laws keeping millions of people from voting, that's not different from how Putin just won his election.
Right.
That's the same sort of thing. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that's what that's what scares me about 2020. And with Trump already running his race, I think they're cooking, you know, the book, so to speak, you know, it frightens me that I don't know that we can have another free and fair election, given all the shenanigans they're pulling. This whole thing with the census question. Is, you know, it's like they're chipping away at our democracy, like one step at a time.
We'll have a big clue soon from the Supreme Court and how they're looking at the gerrymandering questions, because gerrymandering, the Democrats will have to win 60-65% of the vote if they want to take back Congress, because of the gerrymandering around the country. It's so bad. Where, you know, you get a majority vote, but you end up with only 2 of 13 seats in a state or something. It's that bad. And we'll get a clue, because there's all these 5-4 decisions on the Supreme Court for how long. The Republican majority being put in there by this anti-democracy movement, essentially, in a group called the Federalist Society, you know, and those kind of things. If they vote 5-4 to maintain the gerrymandering, then we'll know the fix is solid, and who knows what will happen. Yeah.
Yeah, we're screwed.
So, but Trump plays to this authoritarian side of the Republican Party, which has always been, you know, Reagan, Nixon, they played to this authoritarian side, but Trump just basically grabbed it and ran with it full speed. And I understand now if the primaries, the Republican primaries, are all about, are you loyal to Trump or not?
Yes, that's what...
Yeah, we're in a bad state. We're in a real bad state, Nicole.
Yeah, I know.
Of course, I'm in California, so you're in a worse state. But
And Florida's a prime example of what you're talking about. There are more registered Democrats in Florida than there are Republicans, yet the Republicans control everything. They control the legislature. Yep. They control the governor's mansion and all the executive offices. It's been that way for a long time. But there are more Democrats here. It's all a function of gerrymandering. There was just a second case heard by the Supreme Court, I think it was yesterday, where it apparently was apparent that there were 5 justices who were for getting rid of the gerrymandering, but no consensus on how to go about doing it.
That would be their excuse if they do a 5-4 vote against doing anything about it.
It's frightening. Yep. It's frightening.
It is. It is. So what do we do? Like you said, you're at a loss to know what to do about it.
Yes.
I guess in the short term, it's possible we could get enough people to the polls that they can't do anything about it. And if we get the House, then the investigations, you know. And if we can get the investigations in front of the public, you know, I keep seeing things, though, where there's news and then there's Fox News, and you'll see something in the news, but Fox will have a different take, and then you'll see the polls, and a significant number of people will go with the Fox take on things because that's all they're watching. So will they hear it? But so the Congress will be able to investigate and do some oversight, perhaps, you know, get to the root of some of the corruption, do some of the subpoenas that House Intelligence Committee refused to do. Things like that. That's one hope. But the thing to get, if it continues down the road we're on, is that it has been a successful way to get these clowns out in many countries, Romania, Philippines. I remember when they got Marcos out, and the way they did it was by enough people just go downtown and stand there. They did it in Egypt and with bad results later, and just stand there for hours, days, weeks, and blockade everything in the government capital until they leave. And that works. That has worked in many places. We might come to that. Last Saturday's march, every day.
March. Right. And I don't know that this country has it in us, to be honest. I think people have to work. You know, it's one thing to do it on a Saturday, but to do it every day is hard. Easier is getting people to come out in huge numbers. And there, as you said, Dave Johnson, there are going to have to be massive numbers of people that come out because they're going to have to overcome the gerrymandering and the voter caging and the voter suppression
and the
voter ID suppression methods and all the things they do to keep Democrats from voting. I think...
The fewer places to vote in Democrat areas, you get that one.
Yep. But
machines where you have no idea what the real vote was, because you can't tell.
Yeah.
There's got to be a huge wave to overcome that.
And, you know, Howie Klein, who's usually on with me on Thursdays, he does believe that there is a huge blue wave coming. He sees it in his research. I have to hope that he's right, because it's the only
thing. I'm with you.
The only thing that gives me hope. Ay, ay, ay. And so I keep, you know, we're in primary season now. This is the time to get out and vote for progressives, because otherwise, if we let the Democratic Party have their way, it's going to be Republican light versus Republican in November.
Yep. And we know where that leads. It leads right back to Republicans later.
Yes, right where we are now. Dave Johnson, thank you so much for joining me today. It's always great to talk with you. I really appreciate it, even if we are two Debbie Downers.
Yeah, I was going to say, are you more depressed or less depressed? I'm not sure.
I'm just depressed. Tomorrow on the program, Greg Pallas is going to be here, so he'll get us more depressed. Thank you, Dave Johnson.
Thank you.